Hey. Well, all right. Hello, I'm here. Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in to the Friday show. I've been amazed lately at a couple of things. The level of intensity among the right wingers in the country right now, of course, is at fever pitch. And I think one of the reasons is because they've been having to look into a mirror ever since the slaughter in Tucson. And what they have seen in the mirror has scared the hell out of them to the point where they can't handle it. So they have been running around like headless zombies. The right wingers, everybody, you know, the usual pantheon of morons, the usual closet full of geekish right wingers who, everybody from Brent Bozell to, I don't know, they're all over the place. And what I find interesting is how many of them mention this little program that you're tuned into right now. You know, I get emails from these right wing bastards who say things, I never heard of you. Who the hell are you? You know, I never heard of you until, and that's probably true. And I like it that way. I like having this little program. This is like guerrilla radio. And yet, when these skunks, these cockroaches, these right wingers are caught the way they have been caught with their hate-filled rhetoric, and they immediately try to find, you know, they look around real quick. They're not going to get the kind of radio, that you find here from Tom Hartman, and that's good. They're not going to get it from Randy Rhodes, and that's good. They're not going to get it from Bob Kincaid, and that's good. They're not going to get it from anybody except here. And they're not going to get it from my good friend Sam Cedar. They're not going to get it from Ring of Fire. This little tiny radio show that goes out over maybe 30 radio stations and XM and Sirius and the internet, it just burns these sons of bitches to death. It's amazing to me. It's amazing. People have been sending me video clips from all over the place, from Fox, from MSNBC, from online programs, from these weird, creepy right-wing websites. Malloy, 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 Malloy. Rush Limbaugh should choke to death on his own throat fat. Well, that's true. He should. Sarah Palin is this. Something they quoted something I said about Dana Perino 3 years ago. Okay. That's right. And I have to tell you, frankly, it just, on the one hand, it intrigues me that there is such a library out there of what I've said on this program. On the one hand, and on the other hand, that the only time these scum bastards bring it out is when they want to use this program or me as an example of the hate on the left. Well, let me just say to the right wingers who obviously monitor the hell out of this program, keep it up. I love it. I want all of you to continue to listen to this program, because eventually, like a 9mm bullet, I'm going to penetrate your skulls with what I say on this program. I am. I'm going to penetrate you. And instead of an explosion like you get with a shell, what's going to happen is your mind is going to flood wide open. And all of a sudden, you right-wingers are going to realize how deranged you really are. So keep listening. Keep listening. Every time, O'Reilly is another one. Every time these swine talk about me and this program, I applaud. Kathy and I just go, wow, can you believe that? We applaud the craziness of it. I don't give a rat's ass about, I don't care if they listen or not from a standpoint of, ooh, I want them as an audience. I couldn't care less. But the fact that they do, and not only do they listen, this is probably, this little 25-cent radio program is probably the most recorded and monitored and tracked program on the air. It's just astonishing. Keep it up. Keep it up, you dumbasses. Oh, did you hear? Sarah Palin will deliver the keynote address to a gun convention later this month. The Safari International Club in Reno, Nevada, according to the group's website, this organization bills itself as, quote, the leader in protecting the freedom to hunt. What, has there been an assault on hunting? What the hell are they talking about? The freedom to hunt and promoting wildlife conservation worldwide. Wildlife conservation. Well, it's very simple. The best way to preserve wildlife is to kill it. It goes on to say Sister or Saint Palin's speech is expected to touch on, quote, her past hunting experiences. Taking a drugged up moose and holding it in your gun sights for about 5 minutes. Stand still. Wait a minute. Bang! Oops. No, I missed. There. Stand still. Wait a minute. Bang! Oops. I missed again. Wait a minute. Where is that thing? You hadn't run yet. Sarah, it's because we gave it a shot. Oh, bang! Her hunting experiences. And how politics affects the current state of hunting and fishing. Really? Is there an attempt to register rods and reels someplace that I haven't heard about that Palin has? Oh, my God. So this is how Palin will pick up another $500,000. It says Palin's speech to the gun convention will come as members of Congress and both political parties are pushing gun control legislation in response to the shooting. The proposed legislation includes a ban on carrying guns within 1,000 feet of a lawmaker and a crackdown on high capacity magazines, such as the one used by Jared Lee Loeffner. Blah. Blah, 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 blah. You and I both know that there will be no new gun legislation passed, that these instruments of death in the hands of crazy people, and that's every Republican who owns a gun, means that that gun is in the hands of somebody who's insane. They may be high-functioning insane, but if they are a Republican or a conservative, they are, by definition, crazy. And they have guns, right? But no new legislation will be passed. We all know it. There's a website, caretocare.com. The two is numeral two, caretocare.com. And there's something here I want to share with you that crossed my desk today. Also, I want to tell you about a new website in a minute, but I'll give you the web address right now, clueless at the top, .com, cluelessatthetop.com. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it when we come back. If you want to go there, go ahead. All right, this is the first hour. Who's sponsoring the first hour? It is sponsored by James Miller to honor his wife, Connie Weeks, who was promoted to professor emeritus in mathematics. Congratulations, Connie. Thanks, James. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. For those of you who don't know, the reason I call this a 25-cent radio program is that's what the podcasts cost. If you are not a podcast subscriber and you want this program to continue, you should consider seriously subscribing. It'll cost you $59 and, 60 cents a year. That gets you all the podcasts. And, yeah, there'll be screw-ups. When we have a power shortage or something, you may open your email one morning and there's nothing there. You lost a quarter. But that's what it costs to for each program. It works out to about 25 cents a show. I call it a 25-cent radio program for that reason. The right-wingers call it two-bit radio because they can't stand the pressure they get from this little program that's on 25 stations and XM and Sirius and the Internet, and it just fries their asses to the extent that any time they need to quote somebody on the left, it's usually me. And that's fine. Doesn't make any difference to me. Quote on, you cockroaches. One of the measures being discussed with the new Congress is a whole bunch of anti-abortion legislation. Yeah, they're going to try that again, including even though including a federal conscience clause. Get that, a federal conscience clause that would let religious individuals opt out of performing tasks they feel is against their moral code. Now, if a trained medical person does not want to perform an abortion, fine. No, I don't think anyone has a problem with that. Conscience clauses have mainly made the news as nurses refuse to assist in abortion care in hospitals, or pharmacists refuse to fill prescriptions for drugs they believe are abortifacients, these drugs that assist in preventing a fertilized egg from implanting itself in the wall of the womb. But in Idaho, a pharmacist went a step further and could potentially have killed a woman in the process. The story is from the Idaho Press Tribune. The Idaho Board of Pharmacy Executive Director Mark Johnston confirmed that the board received a complaint alleging that on November 6th, a Walgreens pharmacist refused to fill a prescription ordered by one of Planned Parenthood's Boise, Idaho-based nurse practitioners. The prescription was for a Planned Parenthood patient, and the drug was methegreen. It's a medicine used to prevent or control bleeding of the uterus following childbirth or an abortion. An inquiry to Walgreens' corporate office seeking comment was not immediately addressed. Planned Parenthood officials said the complaint states that the pharmacist called the Planned Parenthood to inquire if the patient needed the drug for post-abortion care. The nurse at Planned Parenthood refused to answer the question based on government-ordered confidentiality of health information, you know, the HIPAA or whatever the hell it's called. According to Planned Parenthood, the pharmacist then stated that if the nurse practitioner did not disclose that information, she, the pharmacist, would not fill the prescription. The nurse alleged that the pharmacist hung up when the nurse said, okay, can you refer me to another pharmacy that will fill the prescription? The pharmacy hung up. Now, there are many issues with the pharmacist asking for the reason behind the prescription. The biggest, of course, is that if the nurse practitioner answered, she would have been violating the HIPAA Privacy Act, setting herself up for anything from lawsuit to firing or both. But even if it were okay to divulge the information, then what? The pharmacist made it clear she would only fill the order if it was for a woman who was having excessive bleeding due to childbirth, not abortion. By refusing to fill the prescription, she was in essence saying that a woman who had an abortion deserved to die. Now, this is a quick glimpse into the immediate future. Do you understand this? Conscience clauses have been created to allow those with particular religious beliefs to avoid doing actions that are against their moral codes. Now, you can disagree with that practice, but you can at least understand that refusing to fill an order for birth control pills or the morning after pill on the grounds that you don't wish to be complicit in what you see as the murder of a new life is kind of insane. But refusing a drug that stops bleeding? The abortion's already happened. The murder has already taken place. And by not allowing the patient to have medicine to control her bleeding afterward, and refusing to transfer the prescription so it could be filled in a timely manner, the pharmacist was not only not saving a life, but could have caused the death of the woman in the process. Now, how is that pro-life? But there's a glimpse of your Republican, neo-fascist, teabagger, United States of dying America future. There it is. You have a bleeding post-procedure that's nobody's goddamn business but your own, and you don't answer the right question, you may be allowed to bleed to death. We'll be right back. Sponsored by James Miller to honor his wife, Connie Weeks, who was promoted to professor emeritus in mathematics. Doesn't say where, but congratulations both to Connie and James. And James, thank you very much for the sponsorship. Patrick Kennedy was the a representative from Democrat, of course, from Rhode Island, and he didn't run for re-election this time. He said the threat level to members of Congress has reached a new level. an interview that's going to air tonight on ABC's Nightline, conducted by Christiane Amanpour. Kennedy, who decided not to seek re-election in 2009, said that some members of Congress have been receiving extra security for years now, unbeknownst to most of the public. Patrick Kennedy said, quote, some of my colleagues, people don't know about it, were getting round-the-clock protection for some time. What it represented to me was a change in the environment, end quote. Since the Arizona shooting, engineered last Saturday by the right-wing so-called pundit class in this country, some have questioned whether members of Congress should be provided extra protection at public events. Of course, you've heard also that certain Republicans are insisting that members of Congress be able to carry guns on the floor of the House. Huh? Isn't that nice? These people, I swear to God, these right-wingers are gun-obsessed. They're just gun-obsessed. And it has to do, I guess, with the penis substitute, even with people like Engel and Palin. Why not? But anyway, currently most members of Congress do not receive Secret Service protection, but it's being talked about after the shooting in Tucson, the FBI briefed members of Congress as well as their staffs and families on ways to ensure security at public events. And in the interview, Kennedy also said that today's political rhetoric has reached a new, quote, irresponsible, end quote, level. He said, quote, we've lived in an environment that sanctioned pretty heated rhetoric. That's really bordering on irresponsible in how much it condones violence and the dehumanization of our political leaders. Now, think about that. You know, they Barack Obama has been reduced to a caricature by the right wing. Anyone who speaks out to protest their filthy rhetoric is reduced to a caricature. Anyone who fights fire with fire, in terms, I'm only talking rhetorical fire now, like I do on this 25-cent radio program, we're reduced to somehow an equivalent to these multi-million, billion-dollar funded right-wing slime machines that go after everybody in this country who speaks out against fascism. Well, screw all of you, you know? I mean, Kennedy said the rhetoric is really bordering on irresponsible in how much it condones violence and the dehumanization of our political leaders. And people on the right, especially people like this blubbery son of a bitch Limbaugh and gun-obsessed Sarah Palin and this psychopathic televangelist Glenn Beck and the little puppet Sean Hannity continue to pump this poison. It doesn't make any difference how many people are shot, how many children die, how many members of Congress are the victim of an attempted assassination. The rhetoric from these bastards continues, and it's not going to stop. If anything, they pump it up. They just pump it up. And that's because they can. You see, they know something that the rest of America should have figured out by now, that the only reason the terrorists are allowed to maintain the airwaves the way they do is because the terrorists are sponsored by capitalist America. This is what gangster capitalism is. This is part of it. To keep these people on the air, to keep the fear and the terror and the divisiveness and the hatred, keep it flowing from every single corner of your radio dial, all over your television dial, keep it flowing while gangster capitalism steals your ass blind and your children and your grandchildren, and you wind up on the street like they care. But keep the poisonous rhetoric pumped. And that's what they do. Every single time you hear a commercial on the Murdoch Terrorist Network, whether that commercial backs O'Reilly or Hannity or Van Susteren or any of these thugs, no matter what it is, I don't care if it's for denture cream or a new car. Keep in mind that what those advertisers are doing are saying, we support this kind of terror. We support it. We want to see it grow. We want to see more shooting. We want to see more killing. We want to see more terror. We want to see it to continue. Now, if that were not the case, would it not be logical for these murder capitalists to withdraw their advertising? How difficult is that to figure out? But they don't withdraw it. They continue to support it. So, if you see a product or a commercial on the Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Network or any of these terrorist radio programs run by these people destroying America, if you hear an advertising, a commercial, just keep in mind, if you buy that product, if you listen to that commercial, you are saying you're in agreement with the capitalist gangsters that are supporting it. That's the only way it goes on. I mean, this is not hard, right? I got this from Charlotte and Harriet in Eugene, Oregon. Dear Mike and Kathy, the rhetoric from the right may make them appear intimidating, But so does the Wizard of Oz before Toto pulls back the curtain. Then Dorothy can see for herself the simple truth behind the smoke screens and spectacles. Now listen, this is important. In the next 2 years, progressives can write a new page in history. We will become an unbeatable positive force when we come together with a common frame that exposes the rhetoric of the right, reaches across many issues, and creates a concrete, fact-based public discussion about our country's future. We'd like to talk to your listeners about how they can join this powerful, important adventure. There's more information at cluelessatthetop.com. cluelessatthetop.com. Now, I went to the I went to their website earlier today, and there's some very intriguing stuff. This is not to sell you anything or to separate you from your what little money you might have left. This is something that just might have an answer. Now, I haven't looked at it like in depth and really, really, really gotten into it, but what I've seen at this website may be something that you and I and people who want to continue to identify themselves as progressives or liberals or people on the left, you might want to check it out. cluelessatthetop.com. All right? Check it out. Just check it out. That's all you have to do. Charlotte and Harriet in Eugene, Oregon, sent that to me. We got a break? Yeah, we have one coming up. Boy, Michael Steele, they finally, the right-wingers and the teabaggers finally made it very clear that Michael Steele was a token, a temporary figurehead, right? Huh? They got rid of him today. And guess who they put in his place? We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. Republican Party Chairman Michael Steele has finally dropped out of the race to continue as RNC chairman after the fourth round of balloting. At that point, no one had received the majority required to become the new chairman. And finally, late today, after the seventh round, the winner is Wisconsin Republican Party Chairman Reince Priebus. His first name is R-E-I-N-C-E P-R-I-E-B-U-S. He tweeted today before the nominations were finally, or the vote was counted, feeling good, in God's hands. Okay, that's kind of interesting, but this is even more interesting. The hard right, the teabag right in this country, is already targeting him with one of the biggest trash talkers on the right, this freak Andrew Breitbart. Breitbart accuses Priebus of not really being a conservative. He's really a closet liberal. And what's the proof? The proof is, at one time, Reince Priebus was also a law clerk for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund in Los Angeles. While he was still in law school, he clerked for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. So that automatically makes him suspect. Now, Andrew Breitbart is scum, purely and simply. I mean, he's just scum. And it's at his website that you can find this information. But they're already targeting this guy to label him even before. I mean, while he was still running as head of the RNC, he's just not fascist enough for these killers on the right. He's just not fascist enough. So Reince Priebus is the new... boy, aren't people going to have fun with that name? Reince Priebus, the new chairman of the Republican National Committee, former law clerk for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund in Los Angeles. And the right wing is already targeting him. And by the way, once again, this hour is sponsored by James Miller, who writes, to honor my wife, Connie Weeks, who has been promoted to professor emeritus in mathematics. Congratulations, Connie, and thank you, James. I get a lot of these. Dear 99ers, I get a lot of these. I'm soon to become one of you unemployed without a safety net. Something I'm not looking forward to at 59 years of age, with my house and everything I've worked for all my life on the line. I just have a hard time understanding why our government has abandoned us. In Europe, this is unlikely to happen, as the governments there look out for their people with better safety nets to prevent people from being thrown out in the streets penniless. Considering the fact that our news media has also abandoned us, I think it's time that we all start writing or emailing the foreign media and telling them what's going on here in the good old U.S. of A. My hope would be that they might report this in their media, and it just might embarrass our government into taking action on our behalf. We as a country have given billions of dollars to foreign countries to help them pay for health care, education, and more. These countries use the money from our government and our tax dollars to help their people. In return, most of the world thinks the United States is the land of honey and our streets are paved with gold. No one goes hungry. No one's forced onto the streets to live. This is the image that our government wants the world to believe, and that's what most of the world believes. I can't understand it. How is it that our country can give so freely to the rest of the world and let our own be forced from their homes and left to die on the streets of America? Maybe if enough of us ask the foreign press to help us, they will. We as people of the United States need to reach out and let the world know what's going on here in the USA, because our own media and our own government couldn't care less. And unless our government is embarrassed by world opinion, we will starve in the streets. I urge everyone to forget about trying to get our media or our government to do anything. I truly believe the only way the 99ers who have lost or will soon lose their unemployment benefits will get any help at all is by telling the world our story. 99 weeks of unemployment insurance is not enough when there are no jobs to be had. In this country also, if you're over 50, most likely no one's going to hire you. So people like me that have worked all our lives and are too young to get Social Security that starts at age 62 are just forced out of their homes and into the streets of America. I will add this to my story, and that is that the company I worked 30 years for couldn't care less about me, and now my own country, my own government, is guilty of the same crime. This country, this nation, should be ashamed of itself, and the world should know just what the USA stands for. Thank you, Gene. I get a lot of those, and I never know how to respond. I shared one with you, letters from people who are so desperate they consider self-destruction. And it usually comes from people in their 50s, late 50s, even late 40s. And they're right. Who's going to hire them? We'll be back after the break, and at the bottom of the next hour, podcast trivia. All right? Thanks to the generous support from people who continue to send in the free subscriptions that we give away. So stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
So, Lisa.
Trivia, thanks to the contributions for that particular segment that keep rolling in from people who really want to see the show continue and like the fun of it, I guess. Thanks a lot, folks. We appreciate it. All right. This hour is sponsored by Greg 2002 Ward. Is that how it reads? Greg Ward? Okay. And this is what the message is. This hour is sponsored by the Malloy Chat Room. Oh, it's the Malloy Chat Room. And the Malloy After Hours Skype Chat, also known as the Hells Socialists Biker Gang, inviting everyone who loves the show to join in. As the Malloy Show aggressive progressive base continues to grow in this new year, we all wish you continued good health, sanity through the rise of the flying monkey right, strength through the calamity of the rise of the boner, John Boner, and serenity of mind following your explosive and always enjoyable rants. Happy New Year from the Mike Malloy Show's loyal gang of bikers, brigands, and socialists keeping it lit and passing it around. The note was created by Maine Coyote. Thanks, Greg, and everybody in the the Malloy chat room. If you want to go there, you can. Just get on Ustream, find the Malloy Show, and jump in. And if you are a troll, they'll just turn you into troll paste. Very simple. Thanks, gang. I appreciate it. So there's your second hour of sponsorship. Yee-haw! Bikers, brigands, and socialists. Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, originally I'd intended to write about the comments of one of your callers last night. However, since that caller gets way more than his allotted 15 minutes of fame, I thought I'd tell you about some of your other international Malloy Show listeners that help make up the Malloy Show family. Hernan is from Argentina. Jeffrey is from the Netherlands. And Kath, Steve, and Chris are from Canada. All are intelligent and thoughtful International Molloy Show listeners, each one of them to discuss the issues we all face here in America. They offer their constructive criticism and support, to help us all deal with the right-wing nausea and help us get through it. These wonderful people do not simply hurl criticisms and run away. They would never take that kind of stealth bomber approach. They deeply care about what we are going through, and there is always thoughtful discussion without reproach. These people from away get what worries us here, and they comprehend what we have to deal with. Likely, there are others not mentioned here that join us nightly in the Molloy chat room. These and many others are our comrades in the fight for clarity and comprehending the right wing and the Tea Party craziness. These are the international listeners that truly deserve way more than just 15 minutes of fame. They're an important part of our extended Molloy Show family. Mike, you obviously have the objectivity necessary to take any call from anyone anywhere. I just wanted you to know, as you probably already do, that a certain caller from down under, I wonder who that would be, does not represent the entire world, which he often sarcastically and condescendingly speaks for in order to make his less than salient points about you, your Molloy Show correspondents, our progressive movement in America in general. Thanks, Kathy in Maine. Now, I've got a couple of these, and they're about Blue. And Blue, if Blue's listening, Blue certainly does provoke discussion, which is fine, I guess, up to a point. We are not going to saturate you on this program with a lot of rhetoric from anybody in particular. I know a lot of people say, you've already done that with him. Well, I guess there's a couple of ways to look at Blue, and that's what I want to do here. But this is kind of funny. This is from Cheryl in Oregon. She writes, Mike and Kathy, my fantasy is that Blue is a 31-year-old guy who moved here from Australia 2 years ago. His sister married an American, and Blue lives in the basement of his sister and brother-in-law's house in Topeka, Kansas. He works two part-time jobs. One job is Tuesdays and Thursdays at the local hardware store, and on Mondays and Wednesdays, he is the ticket taker at the local movie theater. At night, he sits in the basement reading travel and wine magazines while drinking beer and smoking pot. After about three beers and a joint, he calls your program and spins his tales. If I remember correctly, Kay Petrini was not angry about Blue criticizing Obama, but rather his criticism of American liberals. He thought that millions of us should be showing up at rallies in Washington, D.C. Kay spoke about all of us trying to keep our jobs, or if we were unemployed, had no money to travel to D.C., care for perhaps both children and elderly parents, etc. I think Bridget really got it right in her remarks about Blue. I enjoy hearing what he has to say as an Australian viewing what is happening in this country, but his endless travelogues and descriptions of the wine he is drinking is narcissistic and boring. He comes across at times as being quite arrogant. Yeah, he always makes me thirsty, too. But in the final analysis, Blue is right. Why aren't we all in the streets like during the 60s? I am close to your age, Mike. Where are the generations behind us who should be fighting for the cause as we did back in the day? We should have been in the streets when the Supreme Court appointed Bush in 2000. Sharon, and her last name in Oregon, who listens on KPOJ. All right, one more. Well, let me, just something she said here. This last sentence, we should have all been in the streets when the Supreme Court appointed Bush president in 2000. You know, that's true. This is a point that Bob Alexander, who for some reason has just fallen off our radar, a point that Bob Alexander made over and over and over again, that the end of this country as a republic, and of course I'm certainly in agreement with it, I've talked about it over and over, as Bob has, as a lot of you have, the end of this country, not the beginning of the end, but the end, period, of this country, as a republic, as a Democratic Republic occurred on that day in December, I think it was December 12, 2000, when the right-wing neo-fascist Supreme Court ordered George W. Bush into the presidency as if we were Zimbabwe or some country in the bad old days in Central America or South America, where the military, usually backed by the United States, decided who was going to run the country. That was the day the music died in this country, period. When they tried this in various countries around the planet, whether they were leaders that we supported or not is immaterial, as far as I'm concerned. What is material is that when this was tried before, an election was held, the winner was obvious, and either that nation's Supreme Court or the candidate himself was not allowed to take office, the people took to the streets in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. We didn't. We sat back on our asses in this country and we watched as the country was taken away from us without a sound, not a whimper, nothing. And that's the part to me that is just, I can't understand that. But it happened, and here we are 11 years later. You can win a one-year subscription to podcast downloads of this program, commercial-free. Each one is worth 25 cents, and they have a total yearly value of $59.60. But I'll tell you what, it's the best kick you'll get for a quarter anywhere I can think of. Now, a lot of people say, why do I keep giving Blue airtime? Well, I'm really not. You folks have written me an awful lot of letters about the guy, and I don't want your letters just to sit here. He's very provocative, and I want to share some. This is from Sydney, Australia. Hi, Mike. Amazing to see how my fellow Australian Blue has gone from being the flavor of the month to being pilloried by so many of the regulars. On the other hand, I understand how criticism from an outsider can seem presumptuous and rude. But then again, the view from the outside observer can sometimes be clearer and more objective than that of those who are mired in it on a daily basis. I'm always horrified by how little factual information my relatives in Texas have regarding news and politics. Presumably, there's nothing but propagandistic conservative media in Texas. Either way, at this point, a little of the Blue saga goes a long way. Maybe if he calls every few weeks just to keep people on their toes. As a dual Australian, Australia-U.S. citizen, I'm afraid I'm hopelessly drawn to the madness of U.S. politics. Australian politics has minor flare-ups of insanity, but rarely. And I consume your podcast, Hartman's, a couple others, all the newspapers, MSNBC, YouTube channels, etc. It's a full-time job. I save your podcast up as my late-night indulgence, my narcotic. I was surprised enough to hear you say, I was surprised though to hear you say to Blue that, quote, Australians don't shoot their politicians like Americans do, they just shoot each other. I'm not sure where you get this impression since private gun ownership is almost unknown here. I'm 47 and I've never known anyone who owned a gun or even anyone who knew anyone who owned a gun. The only people who have them are really farmers, police, and registered security guards. However, your comment prompted me to look up the numbers in Wikipedia. Surprise, surprise. Australia is 17th in the world in gun ownership, higher than I thought it would be. But as I say, in reality, no one really owns guns, certainly not in the cities, which is where nearly everyone lives. Yemen is number two. Strange. Danny in Sydney. Yeah, and the murder rate, handgun murder rate in Australia is way below the United States. Most of the world is, but it is a noticeable number. But handgun ownership in Australia, they rank 17th in the country. There are a lot of guns in possession of people there. And then this from Mike in Oregon. I'm usually a day late for your show, brother, so I can only guess you have a plethora of emails by now. In my humble opinion, Blue nails it right on the head, and I don't personally care if he is from Mars or Arkansas. The fight has left, much of the left, and I don't know how to get it back. If an outsider can see through the muck and mire that is our political discourse with the clarity that Blue does, let him speak and let it piss off the listeners. I love the angst it causes, and it's not because I love blood. Rather, I'm sick to death of milquetoast people. I can't tell you how many liberals I've run into who are afraid to stand up and goddamn fight. Have an Aussie call them weenies, though, and they'll try to beat him to death. I spent a long time overseas in the 80s offending cultures for this pathetic nation of ours, and I ran into plenty of people who actually enjoyed discussing politics without beating you senseless. But in our romper room nation, it's taboo to even bring it up. America needs to tune into overseas broadcasts or at least read how the balance of the world is screaming at us to effing get control of the biggest arsenal on the planet before we all start wearing Gott mit uns belt buckles and flag pins. Sorry for the rant, Mike, but Jesus Christ, we have a bunch of thin-skinned asshats here in Camp Happy, USA. Grow the F up and take your lumps from those who can clearly see what we're not that we're not doing enough to stop this madness, or it would not be happening. We are doing what Neville Chamberlain did with Hitler, capitulate and cry. So thank you for letting Blue speak his mind, Mike, and I do appreciate your attempting to help him understand why some folks can't handle his criticism, but quite frankly, I can't understand them either. I met plenty of Aussies who think like Blue, and I may carry a huge bias, but balls are balls. If you got them, use them. I'm done ranting now. Mike in Oregon. So, some differences of opinion about Blue, right? Okay, we have a break. When we come back, podcast trivia. Stay with us. Once again for podcast trivia here on the Miller Program. where you can win a new Chevrolet. About this size, it's in one of those little kits. What they used to call it, Hot Wheels. No, what you can actually win is a free one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads from the Loy Program every day in your email. And on the nights when we can't record them because everything screws up here, there will be nothing there. That's why we only charge, if you buy one, $59.60 a year or 25 cents a program. This is the best 2 bits you will ever spend. Oh, but this one is free. All you have to do is answer the question. Adam is in Enterprise, Alabama. Hello, Adam.
Konnichiwa, hello.
What?
I said konnichiwa. I'm sorry. I'm a student of Japanese. So
oh, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. I pepper my speech with Japanese.
Oh, so. Okay. Sorry. Well, that's great, Adam. No, I appreciate it. Thank you for the, konnichiwa.
Well, thank you for having me this evening.
I'm sorry?
Thank you for having me this evening.
Very much. Are you ready to, why do you want a podcast download of this program? Do you listen
a
lot?
I've been listening to you off and on since your Air America days.
Oh my God.
You're one of my liberal heroes.
Well, that's a good, good enough for me. Good enough for me. All right, Adam, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, start the music, please, maestro. All right, Adam, here it is. In the aftermath of last Saturday's tragic massacre in Arizona, what notable neocon claimed that Jared Loughner is supported by the Democrats, saying, quote, what Mr. Loughner knows is that he has the full support of a major political party in this country. He's sitting there in jail. He knows what's going on. He knows that the Democrat Party is attempting to find anybody but him to blame. He knows if he plays his cards right, he's just a victim. Is it A, Glenn Beck, B, Rush Limbaugh, C, Sarah Palin, or D, John Boehner?
I know this. I'm going to go with the oxymoron, B, Rush Limbaugh.
You got it. All right, Adam, way to go. It's pretty horrible that an American citizen could make a statement like that.
Well, they have no honor.
That's true. Let me ask you, why are you studying Japanese?
To be honest, sir, I read a really good book. Actually, it's a book your daughter might be interested in when she's older. It's called Brave Story. It's a very Joseph Campbellian work. You know, it follows the hero cycle, and I have an interest in mythology. Good books need to be translated. There are books out there our kids and adults can't read because no one wants to translate Japanese. So I said, that's my dream. I want to translate children's books.
Well, I'm very impressed. It's not it's not an easy language to learn, I've been told, for an American. For someone who speaks American English, it's not a very easy language to learn. Is that correct?
It's very counterintuitive because the sentence format is different. It's a, how do I explain? It's a topic verb sentence. In other words, the topic always comes first and then the verb at the end.
Wow.
And in between that, you can have anything. Whereas your European languages are mostly the same format. German is like English with less grammatical rules. I know that because I took German in middle school. But, this is my dream. This is what I'm going to do.
Well, so. I think it's great that you're realizing that dream. Adam, it's a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad you won. Will you hold on, Kathy? We'll get the pertinent information.
Yes, sir. I'll be happy to wait.
Okay. Thanks, Adam. Well, not only is Japanese, do I consider it to be intimidating as a language, and only because I'm intimidated by foreign languages that are not romance languages, that are not Latinate languages, or in a pinch, Germanic, but languages that are so foreign to my ear and to my eyes, and that do not use the Roman alphabet. That's why I would love to learn Russian. But I think it would be very difficult for me to learn is it Cyrillic? Alphabet. I digress. Never mind. This is a talk show. All right, Sanchez is in East L.A. Sanchez, welcome to the program.
Konnichiwa.
No, that's already been said.
Do I win? Is it me?
It's already been said. You're supposed to say buenas noches or como está or whatever.
Oh, okay, but I already know that language. I know. I'm trying to study a new language. Oh.
Well, try Japanese.
Okay, muy buenas noches to you.
Yeah.
But as a reminder, since this is my first call of the new year, I'm not gonna wish you a new year, but merely a stern reminder to you that we're still living without our Fourth Amendment rights, with wiretapping,
yes,
with rendition,
yes,
and with, what is it now, 180 paid Homeland Security contractors. So I'm going to wish you a police año nuevo.
A police new year.
Yes, as opposed to a Feliz Año Nuevo.
Oh, I see. Instead of Feliz Navidad, it's Police Navidad or Año Nuevo.
Yeah, so it is a Police Año Nuevo, Senor Boy.
Oh, thank you very much, but no thanks.
Okay, all right. So many topics to cover here. I really want to address this thing about blue and the perception that a lot of people seem to have. Now, I really don't want to criticize the guy every time I've heard him. It sounds like he's, you know, calling from some cocktail lounge or some party he's hanging out. I know he's a globetrotter, and he's probably meeting all these globetrotting trust fund baby surf boys and, you know, people that you know, Americans that seem to be able to travel.
Yeah.
It's not generally the grassroots culture here in the United States. You know me, man. I think I've been calling you since, I think, what, 2004? Again, since your Air America days.
Right, right.
And you know that I attend most of the marches, most of the rallies. I'm an activist, and, you know, I'm a member of the Whittier Area Peace and Justice Coalition.
Uh-huh.
We are doing our part. It's not necessarily us here in the grassroots. You know, we're trying everything we can. We're banging our heads against the wall. I mean, you reported on this a couple of weeks ago, Mike. A friend of mine, his name is Mike Preisner. He was formerly in Iraq Veterans Against the War. He's right. Organizing all of these amazing marches, and, you know, he's a guy that has 200% energy, and I really admire this guy, Mike Preisner, and he was one of the 135 people that was chained against the White
wow.
House fence and
right.
got arrested.
Right.
And did any single source in American corporate media cover the event?
Other than online media, there were a couple of reports in newspapers. There was the New York
yeah.
Times. There was in Washington Post. Were there were there cameras there to let America know that that veterans were speaking out against this and give it the coverage it deserved? No, of course not.
No, and that has been the case for nearly a decade now. I mean, when we were out marching before the Iraq war had even started,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were given maybe, what, 3 seconds in local and national press?
Right.
There were millions of people marching against that war all over the world. But no, we don't get that exposure. You know, it's all corporately dominated, and you perfectly already, I'm not even going to repeat what you said earlier about that, because you've already described it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the answer to, for example, last year's Tea Party, the great sensation in politics, people came up on the progressive side and tried to organize what was called the Coffee Party. But it wasn't even mentioned anywhere, not even on NPR was it mentioned.
Right.
So, you know, to Blue, it's like, dude, listen, mate, the cards are stacked against us here, man. You know, it's like we're trying to get the word out as best we can, as often as we can. But we're not getting a fair shake from the American media or the worldwide press. So that's part of the problem here that you may not see from wherever
mm-hmm.
you're going to be at tonight, Chile or Sri Lanka, or I think he's in Zanzibar tonight, isn't he?
I'm not sure where Blue is tonight.
Well, whatever cocktail party or whatever he's calling, or he'll be calling you from, it's like taking into consideration that you're not getting the full 100% story of what's happening here. Because, you know, damn it, we're doing everything we can. You know, again, I say as an activist, and I may sound a little bit aggravated tonight, but it's true. You know, here we are in the grassroots, and we're not getting a fair shake. Nobody reported on the protest. You know, we have protests here against the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war. As far as the Afghanistan war protest was concerned, there was probably about 50 or 60 people in front of the Hollywood Marine Corps activating recruitment center.
Mm-hmm.
And although people were honking their horns passing by in support, 50 people is all we could muster. So, You know, people are busy here. People are struggling too, you know? It's not like it was 10 years ago when we still all had jobs. I'm 54 years old. I've been out of work for 9 months, Mike.
Jesus.
9 months. And I'm not a 99er. I don't qualify for unemployment, so I'm living off my life savings. But I'm a smart dude. I didn't get into debt. I don't have a mortgage. I don't have, I just paid off my last electrical bill today, so I don't owe a dime to anybody. I'm one of the smart people. I know how to survive. But again, you know, it's like people are struggling now, so we can't all afford to pay, what, $300 to hop a bus to go to Washington, D.C., and, you know, chain ourselves against a fence. That's why I respect and I admire somebody like Mike Prizner, who organizes these things, and no matter where it is that he calls for a demonstration or a march or an organization, I'm there, because that's my part. That's my part to show everybody else that we are doing what we can.
I hear you. I hear you, Sanchez. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Okay, man.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll be right back.
Well, sometimes I can see all I have is one.
More Mike Malone.
Ten before the hour. This is the Malloy program. And this hour has been brought to you by... Are you ready? This hour has been brought to you by the Malloy Chat Room. And the Malloy After Hour Skype chat, a.k.a. the Hell's Socialist Biker Gang. And they're inviting everyone who loves the show to join in. Greg, who sent this in, says, as the Malloy Show aggressive progressive base continues to grow in this new year, we all wish you continued good health, sanity through the rise of the flying monkey, right? Strength through the calamity of the rise of the John Boner, and serenity of mind following your explosive and always enjoyable rants. Happy New Year from the Mike Malloy Show's loyal gang of bikers, brigands, and socialists, keeping it lit and passing it around. And the note was created by Maine Coyote. Thanks a lot to the Malloy Chat Room for the sponsorship. I definitely appreciate your support. Phone calls. Nora's in Minneapolis. Hello, Nora.
Oh, hi there, Mike.
Hi.
I'm so excited I got to go to my beloved Congressman Keith Ellison. Tonight he held Congress on the corner.
Uh-huh.
And everybody got to go in groups of six to go see him and or his people, and after they had a talking. Anyway, I got to go hug and kiss and yell how much I love him and how grateful I am, because 3 days ago we found out that he has written a letter to Eric Holder complaining about what the FBI has been doing to our peacemaking women here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in Chicago that have been harassed.
Wait a minute.
That was one of the goals.
Wait a second. Back up just a little bit, Nora. You were allowed to go in six at a time?
Well, they did. I didn't go in. I just saw him. You know, I'm an old friend of his from 20 years ago, so I just walked up to him. But, yeah, he had people sitting at a, you know, coming in groups of five or six to talk with the congressman personally about their issues.
Was that an issue brought about, or the way that's handled, is that a result of the attack? On the congresswoman?
It was a commemoration of the attack. He named it Congress on the Corner in honor of Gabby.
Right.
The event.
Right. But, I mean, the fact that they only allowed six people in at a time, was that a security measure, or don't you know?
Oh, no, I think it was so people can individually talk to him. First, they had a group event with a lot of prayers. Clyde Belcourt prayed for, you know, in his language and prayed for in all directions, and then they had a bunch of some Muslim prayers, and then people talked, and then after that, they did the small group thing so people can talk about their personal issues, and you know, otherwise it's this big crowd of cameras all around them.
Yeah, it's frightening to me to think that we are very close to the point where it will be necessary that when a member of Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate, wants to talk with constituents back in the home district or the home state, that we're very close now to having to limit the number of people who get to approach the member of Congress at one time, and that those people may have to go through some sort of security check. And this is all because of the terror that the right wing in this country has brought to the United States. This is a direct result of Sarah Palin and her goddamn targets. It's a result of Rush Limbaugh, 20 years trying to upend and destroy the country. Glenn Beck, who insists on dumping his dry, drunk, unrecovered addiction crap, his 12-step nonsense into this country. Sean Hannity, who sits there with his wide-eyed look into the camera, tossing softballs that have been scripted for him by somebody who couldn't make it onto Limbaugh's staff. I'm so sick of this. And the fact is, it's come to that point, Nora, and I think everybody in this country knows that we are so close now to having to restrict for the safety of our elected representatives. I'm talking about the Democrats. I'm talking about the what few progressives or liberals there may be in the House or the Senate, if there are any left. But the Democratic Party especially, I would fully expect, and I think we'll see this year. Mark my words, I hate to make political predictions, but it's getting easier and easier with these stormtrooper sons of bitches. And I have a feeling that before this year is over, when a Republican goes to his or her home district, if he or she is a member of the House, that they will be accompanied by private contractor, fully armed, black-suited, black-water types. And the armed cadre will stand there with their sunglasses on and their ear plugs and their fully automatic weapons and allow people to come in and talk to the right-wing member of Congress. Even though nobody threatens these sons of bitches, nobody. But this is going to be this will be the reaction now. Because every right-winger, every teabagger, every conservative, whether they hold elective office or not, is a coward, a liar, and has absolutely, absolutely no honor. So this is what I guarantee you, before this year is out, this is what's going to happen. Okay, take a deep breath, Malloy. We're going to take a break. We will be back after the break. Do we have some music, Kathy? There we go. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Thanks for sticking around or tuning in or whatever you're doing right now. Let's go back to the phone calls very quickly here. Joe is in San Diego. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Mike. How's everything in Georgia?
It's fine. It's fine. I can barely hear you, though, Joe. Can you...
Here we go again. Can't hear me?
It's a little better now. Go ahead.
Okay. I called last night, and I tried to get, you know, got connection problems. I hope I'm on a better phone here. I called last night about what O'Reilly did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, first came on with you, put a picture up of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I hope it was a good one.
It was about the fat man, about the Oxycontin man.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't get the words right. It sounded like something out of context. And then he put Schultz on, all people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about Cheney, and he wanted Cheney to get out of the country. But that was so bad, right?
Right.
Then he put this, he introduces this nasal tone, Laura Ingraham. Right away, they start attacking Obama about not telling the audience not clap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying to myself, but that's what Molloy was talking about last night, about why should the audience clap and all that, but they wouldn't mention your name about that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing mentioned about Beck, of course, he's on their station, he's on their network, about killing, wanting to kill Moore.
Michael Moore, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing whatsoever.
Right. Well, the thing is, Joe, I know that you don't expect any kind of fairness or balance on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization. That whole stable of jackasses is there for one reason. Killer jackasses are there for one reason: to do as much damage to the United States of America as they possibly can. They're doing a good job of it. Every time there is another act of domestic terrorism in this country, every time somebody is shot or an attempt is made to kill people because of their political point of view, it is because the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization and the criminals who broadcast from that cesspool have scored another win. This is all they are interested in. All O'Reilly, when he's not groping his female staff, when he's not being sued for sexual harassment, when Limbaugh, who is not associated with Fox, but he might as well be, when Limbaugh is not stuffing his mouth with drugs that he sends his housekeeper out in the street to score for him, when Hannity is not reading his scripts, and when Beck is not showing his dry, drunken, addicted behavior to the rest of America, when they're not doing that, they're not being effective. The only way they have of measuring their effectiveness is who was shot in the street today. Who was arrested on their way to blow up another social justice organization? Who is out there telling lies today to incite violence in the country? That is the only way that the people who work for the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization have a way of judging their effectiveness. So when O'Reilly talks about me, it doesn't mean anything whatsoever. O'Reilly is a punk. He's a sexual harasser. He's a predator. And like everybody else on that cesspool broadcast terrorism, he only cares when he can get people fighting. So to hell with him. To hell with all those pigs. I get tired really, really tired of talking about them. I really do. Swine. Michael in New York City.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
So good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
I heard a few things that Blue was saying yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I heard everything. What I heard was that he said, your president is a fraud. And he said, liberals are impotent. And I think it's interesting. Of course, there's a knee-jerk reaction to condemn that kind of thing, from an American point of view. However, I think we really have to understand how malignant our culture looks to people from outside this country. And how could you say Obama's a fraud? Well, I think the obvious thing is, I mean, where's the prosecution of the war criminals? That's pretty obvious to just about everybody outside America. You know, Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib, I mean, where are the prosecutions? Nowhere.
Right.
You know, and liberals are impotent, of course. We might be jumping up and down saying, you know, this is no good. And we say, oh, well, I guess we can't. We have to pick our battles, you know. No, you can't win them all. You know, well, he's done some good things.
I'm always curious because I know that I have this this conflict. I don't know why I can't get rid of it once and for all, but I have a certain amount of conflict about Obama.
Obama?
Yeah. What do you see? What would make you feel that he was not as Blue said, a fraud?
Well, I think that if there had been obvious prosecutions of the war criminals, and obviously he stopped torture, supposedly, but apparently there are allegations that's still going on. Regardless, if there, nobody from the Bush administration is being prosecuted, is that okay? John, you, none of the lawyers, nobody. I mean, who gets prosecuted? Lindy England? It's absurd. I mean, find the lowest level people involved in everything, the people who are just carrying out the orders, who are too stupid to know otherwise, and doing what the, people like Rumsfeld were telling them to do, and prosecute them. Yeah, sure, that sounds good. It doesn't sound good in Europe. It doesn't sound good,
Well, I think the problem, Michael, thank you. I hear you loud and clear. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you your calling in. I think the problem a lot of progressives, a lot of liberals are having is there's just this, I mentioned the other night in a different context, but this cognitive dissonance. A normal person, that is a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive, can listen to Obama and get a sense of inspiration in much the same way that Clinton used to inspire, and in fact, much the same way as Reagan used to inspire. The use of political rhetoric is an art. You got to know how to do it. God knows neither Bush had an Ice Cube's chance in hell. Carter certainly didn't. Gerald Ford, you're kidding me. Nixon, please. Just keep going back. Kennedy did, kind of, sort of. LBJ didn't. I know I'm going too far back for most of you now. But the use of political rhetoric, especially when it appears to be sincere, is captivating. I mean, it's supposed to be. That's what it's designed to do, to hit all the notes, to hit all those soft spots inside of all of us where we really feel bruised, where we really feel like we're lacking some kind of effective leadership. And Obama is so good at doing that. But then when you look at what's really going on, well, I'll tell you what, when we come back after this break, I have an email here from one of the program's ethics advisors, and I'll share it with you because she kind of hits on the very thing Michael is talking about. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everything is neat and clean. The skeletons are hidden in the closet. This is my private place. Can you get me out of here?
blowing up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. All right, let me share with you, and I'm going to try to make this the last, for now anyway, blue email. I appreciate his calling the program, his choice of descriptive terms, perhaps, that's a good way to put it, are kind of grating. But he makes some points that I think are worth considering. And anyway, I want to share with you from Bridget Wolf, who is one of our ethics advisors to this program. Mike, I was bothered last night by the vehemence of my reaction to Blue and his comments. Granted, I feel more than a bit protective of Kay Petrini, not that she isn't more than capable to take care of herself, but I happen to know that Kay did not and would never take issue with Blue or anyone's right to speak. She took issue with the tone, which speaks volumes. I find it interesting that Blue couldn't hear that distinction. You're right about not taking his comments too seriously. My mother always taught me to, quote, consider the source, end quote. What irritated me so much about Blue's call last night was his assertion that, quote, liberals in your country are impotent, they've done virtually nothing, end quote, and that, quote, your president's a fraud, end quote. Let me take the last one first because it's the easiest. Our president is a politician. Many of us may have hoped he could walk on water, but that was projection. He's never been a progressive. He inherited a completely dysfunctional political system, economy, and society, all of which have been taken over by the rotting capitalist system that controls it all. I still believe that he is a man of goodwill and good heart, but I personally think it was naive. I think he actually believed that other politicians he was dealing with actually wanted to help solve the problems of this country. I think what he has managed to do, in light of what he inherited, has been fairly remarkable. I have railed against many of his choices, but until I adopt the position that it's time to bring it all down and live with the consequences of what that means for me and my neighbors, I'm still not willing to turn it over to Sarah Palin. Now, about Blue's condemnation of the liberals in this country. From a macro view, which is really all he can have looking in from the outside, he's right. But his vision from that perspective is severely limited. I don't care how many friends he visits in Portland, he can't see what's happening at a grassroots level, which, since we liberals don't have the money or the power structure to fight at a national level, is where the activism is, locally. I can only speak from the micro, from my community, which, by the way, Blue, is not that far out of Portland, which in itself is a very progressive city. I don't want to bore you or your audience with all the details, but let me give you a few high points. We liberals in this community have, over the past 5 years, elected progressives to the city council, the county board of supervisors, the school district, and the port commission in an area that was long dominated by the good old boy network. Our voter turnout in the last election was over 76%. That's an off-year election. We have organized and stopped a project that had horrendous environmental implications, passed a bond issue to build a new community college campus, worked with environmental groups on a statewide level to establish marine protected areas off our coast and watershed protection for salmon streams. We're working to help homeless kids, change drug laws, and fund the arts in schools. We work to strengthen social justice for the Hispanic and Native populations through an amazing organization called the Rural Organizing Project, which is a statewide organization of locally based groups that work to create communities accountable to a standard of human dignity, the belief in the equal worth of all people, the need for equal access to justice, and the right to self-determination. Starting in 1992, this organization challenges to the anti-democratic right have earned it a national reputation for being an effective grassroots organization that takes on the hard issues. They take names and they kick ass. I can't end this list without mentioning that some of us who believe that media plays a huge role in creating an active and aware citizenry, worked for 3 years to bring community radio to this area, an endeavor you were kind enough to help us with by giving us space on your show in the early fundraising days. On January 4th this year, we got our construction permit from the FCC for a full-power FM NCE station. Now we'll spend the next 2 to 3 years raising the money and building the station. We hope to get on the air before the 2012 election so we can bring clear, honest information to our community. None of this will change the country tomorrow, but the right wing didn't suddenly pop out of a bubble either. They've been working it from the grassroots for 30 years. Yes, they built think tanks and other national platforms with big money, and we don't have that yet. But there is vital activism, even revolution, happening on the local level, and that's what's not visible to someone like Blue, who's sitting on his high and mighty perch. He can't see what we worker ants are doing down here. I'm not saying he's wrong about much of what he has to say about the national picture, but I wanted to demonstrate that he only sees the large picture, not the down-to-earth part. He can throw stones at our government and national policies as much as he wants to, but when he starts throwing stones at those of us who keep working to make a difference while he's not contributing anything except hot air, I get pissed off. Yes, I do. Thanks for allowing a spirited discussion and helping us all take a closer look at how we choose to see the world. Got to thank Blue for that as well. As always, Bridget.
Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Ike is in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Ike.
Hey, old man. I'm a blast from your past.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Did you ever get your house painted?
Oh, I remember you. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, we got it painted, but then we had it all apart and resided.
It's a never-ending process, my friend.
Oh, I'm telling you. How you been? Are you still in business?
No, I've had some bumps in the road, you know, and I'm approaching one of those 99ers that people like beating up on in the media as being, you know, worthless and not wanting a job and all that groovy stuff. But I just like to win one ear and out the other because I know that any unemployment benefits is my money in the first place, because if I hadn't worked, the man would have never earned the money to be able to pay the bill in the first place. So that's my money. I'm not worried about it.
I hear you.
But I can't complain, brother. I can't complain. Ain't no sense in complaining. I'm more positive than that. Let me just put out here, the only reason I'm able to listen to you now is because I have had the ability to get a very cheap smartphone. Okay?
Yeah.
I get you on TuneIn. And that's why I'm calling you, is to let you know a bright positive side of this. I predict something for you, my friend.
Yeah, what's that?
I predict Glenn Beck, who's already losing in ratings, and a lot of these other right-wing blowhards are going to continue in a downhill spiral. The more that these smartphones branch out and the more people get access across the net, I mean, I've even got this thing set up to where I can plug it into the car and run it through the speakers. So, you know, I'm no longer abused by the unfree speech, what I like to call listen radio,
right?
Because they won't let me on. Neil Bortz banned me a long time ago. You know that.
Well, that's in your favor, Ike.
Well, I want to. You know me, man. I love doing battle. I don't have a problem with it. But if you're going to shout over me, and hang up on me and then call me names after I can't, you know, after I'm off the air, and then, you know, make it impossible for me to get on the air. That's why when Clyburn brought up the fairness doctrine, I got to tell you something. They're already, it's just the same way with the health care debate. Mm-hmm. They say the government's going to ration health care. Well, you know what? These people are already doing this stuff to us to begin with.
Sure.
They're cutting down on free speech. They're already rationing health care. You know, so, you know, those arguments don't wash for nothing. But I'm just telling you, brother, you still got a future in this, and we still got a long way to go. But I think we can take them down. By the way, I called my congressman, and this is what I put forward. I want a forensic accounting. I want the IRS and the FCC to go into these operations and find out where they're getting their money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are rules about pay to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but those rules have been kicked completely to the curb now, Ike. You know this Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court last year that said a corporation has just as much right to buy an election outcome or support a candidate as you do, as I do. You know, we've always tried to keep corporate money, we've tried anyway, out of the political process. And now the Supreme Court said corporations are they may be soulless pieces of paper filed in some lawyer's office, but they have as many civil rights now as you do, Ike. So, for the most part, we know who's funding these right-wing bastards. It's the billionaires. It's these billionaires like the Koch brothers who are in the oil and the oil services business. They don't give a damn about you and me. They don't give a damn about the country. They don't give a damn about anything except they like to raise hell for sport. They like to see black on white and Jew against Gentile and gay against straight and man against woman and liberal against conservative. They don't care. It's sport. It's like the ancient Roman Colosseum. You know, bring in the Christians, all right, bring in the gladiators, all right, bring in the lions, all right, bring in this group, all right, bring in those people we captured in Persia, bring in those ones we captured in Africa. Now throw them all together and let the sons of bitches kill each other while we sit up here in the grandstands drinking wine and eating grapes. That's all these people are doing.
And making money off at the boot. Yeah, they're riding the tiger, but at one point, you know, they might just lose a grip, and that's what I'm hoping for. Hey, listen, by the way, lastly, just real quick on the gun topic, I think there should be a psych evaluation before you can purchase a gun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you should be made to buy insurance or pay higher fees to cover the damage that this is doing to us taxpayers and the people that have lost their family members and lost their way of making a living or being provided for. I've got personal friends. I've had a gun to my head, by the way. If you never had that pleasure, you change your mind about guns. But I've had friends that have been shot, and in both cases, their families are destitute because of it. You know, I'm tired of these people making damages with these guns, legal or illegal owners, I don't care which. You did it to the tobacco with the same excuse, which is you're costing taxpayers. Well, you realize how much money they're costing us. I want them to pay for it in the price of their guns, their permits, and their ammunition.
Right. And I reluctantly, I hate guns, even though I own a couple, but I hate them. I wish I lived in a place where it wasn't, I wish I had a job. That's what I'm trying to say. Where I didn't feel like my life was threatened every day. A. B. As far as permits, sure, I think anyone who buys a gun, and these loopholes about gun shows and auctions and online and all that crap, you know, that's crap. You want to buy a gun? Fine. I tell you what you have to do. You have to go through a legal background check. You have to go through a psychological background check. You have to appear before a psychological evaluation officer, a psychologist who evaluate you. You have to wait 15 days. Then you can get a gun.
Yep. And how about a couple of recommendation letters, one from your meeting supervisor and one from a family member?
Right. One from your spouse. I feel like my spouse is sane and rational enough to have a weapon. Hey, listen, Ike, I got to move on. Thanks, man. I'm glad to hear from you. I'm glad you said about the house painting thing. I never would have remembered who you are. But thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Stay in touch, okay?
Love you, brother.
All right. Take care. Take care, Ike. Boy, you talk about a voice from the past, Kathy. He was over here one day, or we talked about it one time. What, 10 years ago? Did he actually come out here and give it? He didn't? No, we were just talking about it. Well, anyway, Ike, yeah, we got the house painted when we first moved in here. That was good for about 3 years, and then we redid it. Nobody cares about that, Malloy. Go back to your job. I'm sorry. Brian is in Beverly Hills. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Mike. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Hey, I wanted to make a point about Blue, but first I wanted to say there is hope even beyond the Citizens United case, because here in California, all that corporate money made no difference. We still were able to vote in Democrat.
Yeah, that's true.
Isn't that ironic?
What was her name? Nutmeg. What did she spend? $140 million and couldn't get elected. And Jerry Brown got elected again. He now becomes the youngest and the oldest governor ever to serve in California. I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And Carly Fiorina, same thing.
Yep, exactly.
She spent millions and millions and couldn't do it. So
we can beat the corporations even if they spend all the money they want. All we have to do is, you know, be organized and be smart.
Well, yes,
recognize it.
You're absolutely right to be organized and to use whatever resources we do have to use it smartly, if that's a word.
Exactly, and just to recognize what corporate money is, and once you see it, you just go, okay, whatever they say, we don't believe, because we know that it's a money thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to also comment about Blue because, you know, I feel like, you know, I've never been offended by anything he's ever said. You know, and all the times I've listened to him call in, and every time he does call in, I'm always a little bit more attentive because I want to hear what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a part of the problem is in our culture, you know, we're very used to having everything sugar-coated, you know, and when we hear just brutal, honest, speak, we tend to be a little taken aback by it, you know. And I think you know, if you travel overseas and you live in another culture for a while, you know, you sort of you understand that, you know, it's kind of a use of language, and most people, you know, in other cultures, are the language is much more direct, and there isn't a lot of sugarcoating. So, you know, when we hear something, you know, when Blue says something that, you know, sounds harsh, I don't think he's trying to be harsh. I think he's just speaking his mind, and I don't really feel like, you know, I mean, even if he says something I don't disagree with, I'm not offended by anything he says.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it's just how we hear things.
Right.
I can probably go either way, but I think the points that Bridget made are extremely valid. There's an awful lot going on by liberals who are literally working their behinds off to fight this tide, this red tide, and Blue's not aware of that. And I think, you know, that's exactly the point that Bridget was making. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Brian. We'll be right back, y'all.
I've half died.
For the hour. Yeah, it's a Malloy program, you right-wing cockroaches. I want want to give some credit where credit's due. We don't do this often enough. Ben Birch still provides the White Rose stream and the technical support to the program. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Economic affairs is Bruce Enberg, or as you know him, Prairie 2. Education affairs, Kate Petrini, San Francisco school teacher. Programs, two ethical advisors, Bob Alexander. Somebody needs to find him. And Bridget Wolf, whose point of view you heard tonight. And, of course, our engineer and executive producer is Kathy. From Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, criticism is painful, it seems. With regard to Obama, as I think he showed in his memorial speech, he's determined not to offend the very people who are in large part responsible for the country's problems. We saw that early on with his refusal to bring lawbreakers in the prior administration to justice, and in his continuing choices of advisors who will coddle the very people who wrecked the economy. For the record, Blue's assessment that American liberals are impotent is virtually the same as in Tony Jute's book published around the time of his death, Ill Fares the Land. So this is not a view that is unique to Blue. If one were to generalize from one particular, it's beyond astonishing that a Democratic president would even consider entertaining compromise on the fundamental New Deal program of Social Security, as is a clear indication that indeed liberals are virtually impotent in the face of the onslaught against ordinary citizens, which is being waged by the right wing. Michael, in Roswell, and the reference there to Social Security is there's some stuff going on behind the scenes regarding Social Security that has been the right wing's wet dream since the mid-40s anyway. And Obama is allowing a discussion regarding the destruction, might as well say destruction, of Social Security. This has been the one thing that neo-Nazis in this country have gone after since the very beginning. And the fact that a Democrat, as Michael points out, that a Democratic of all people, a Democratic president, Republican presidents have left it alone. Oh, Reagan talked about it, but a Democratic president is considering working with people who want to destroy Social Security, and it's more than just an insurance program for retirees. There are aspects of Social Security that the average teabagger doesn't have a clue. And the right wing, the neo-Nazis, the gangster capitalists, they know full well that the trillions of dollars that are involved would make these filthy cockroaches even wealthier. And they want it. Remember what the truly 0.1%, very top of the food chain in this country, the people that make the hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars a year, they don't make it. They steal it. They manipulate it. They create it out of nothing. They don't earn it. They don't do anything to deserve it. But remember what they want. They don't want 99.9% of everything. That's not the goal. The goal is 100% of everything. And then at their choosing, at their whim, they will dole out a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit over there, like the lords and ladies did in the days of feudalism. Mary is in Early, Iowa. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. I like Blue, but I do want to say that in Washington Journal, every morning on C-SPAN, I have noticed that they don't let you speak as they used to. We used to be able to bring, not that I've called that much, we used to be able to talk about anything we want when we called in.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have one subject that we can talk about. It's as if they control us. And their book, the weekends, they have books. Those, and I used to love to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I love books. But now they're having people from the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, going awfully far to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that I don't even want to watch it anymore. They are telling us what we can talk about. So it used to be that we could talk about anything we wanted to, but not anymore. So I wanted to say that, and then I want to know how to get a podcast or get podcasts.
If you go to my website, MikeMalloy.com, I'll tell you what, let me put you on hold, and I'll have Kathy explain it to you, because I've got to bail out of the program here. Just stay where you are, Mary, and Kathy will explain it to you. That's it for us tonight, for this week. It's been a miserable week. It's been a horrific week. But keep your chin up, okay? I'll see you Monday. Have a good weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.